Blog Talk Radio.
Playing Sports City Chefs from Amazon Music.
Yeah. Woo! Let's go!
Y'all need to sit back, listen, enjoy the vibe. Sip something, light it up, enjoy the ride. Cause the Sports City Chefs is on the night. In the kitchen cooking up, they on the rise. City chefs is in the room, cooking up hot topics to put up on your spoon. They well in tune, blown like a flower in June. Superman versus MF Doom, the clouds loom. So tell a friend, it's the Sports City Chefs again. Pay attention, tune in, we on the set again. Sports City, chefs, chefs.
Took off his blazer, loosened up the tie, stepped aside. The kitchen timeless is alive. Sports City, what's going on? It's your boy TP Thomas holding this thing down for the Sunday morning brunch with the Sports City Chefs. The calling number is 929-477-2759. We got you locked and loaded for the next 90 minutes or more. You could have been anywhere else in the world, but you are here with Sports City. I have a co-host with me calling out of the mountain region of the United States of America, the Colorado guy himself, Big Easy Eric Gross. Welcome to the brunch. How are you feeling this morning?
Good morning, my brother. I am feeling great and excited to be here with you.
Yeah, man, an electric week of sports, and the NBA postseason is upon us. MLB is flying around, getting some interesting news across the board. And it's like Christmas for me. I'm a big basketball lover myself. If I had to pick between the two, but I love all sports. I can't even sit here and just like say I don't love them all. But I know my heart goes into it when the NBA finals are around. It's like it's a different kind of Christmas. But let's get into this as best as we can. The games went down in the schedule, and we have four games slated for today as well that we'll be digging into and trying to figure out, how these games go down, our predictions, things of that nature. It is a very interesting, odd, shall I say, for one of these series, and it's making me scratch my head like crazy. But the first game that went down yesterday was the Miami Heat visiting the Milwaukee Bucks, and this was a thriller, ups and downs, highs and lows, edge of your seat stuff happening, and this game went overtime. The Bucks win this game 109-107 with a last-second shot from Chris Middleton and basically left 0.5 on the clock. Eric, I want to hear your thoughts on the game, how this game went down. I want to say more or less likely that Giannis had suffered something that bothered him. I don't want to really say he's injured, but it was within his arm and more or less looked like it was within his forearm and bicep region. Some people are saying it was within his shoulder, but they were able to keep him on the floor, put a sleeve over that arm, and take care of business in game one. Your thoughts on this game against Milwaukee, visiting them and making this a tight one?
This is going to be a tough series for Milwaukee. On our other show, talked about the Heat, stunning them. I still think the Heat will come back and win this series. So it was a great game. If you look at the box score, 24-22 the first quarter, 26-31 in favor of Milwaukee in the second quarter. And then the third and fourth quarter, we had one and two point differences, the same with overtime. Milwaukee had 10, and the Miami Heat had 8 in the final quarter of overtime. So they got big performances by Duncan Robinson. Jimmy Butler could have played better, so could have Bam Adebayo. if they would have got better performances from those two guys, I think they would have won this game because the bench did good. Gordon Dragic put up 25, Nunn 10, Tyler Herro 10. So they got a pretty good performance. But they didn't stop Giannis and Middleton. They both did what they do. Big game out of Brook Lopez, too. Drew Holiday showed up. So it was a fun game to watch, Timeless. I really enjoyed it. But Milwaukee's going to have to play like this all series long if they're going to want to win this series.
Okay, hold on. We do have a caller calling out of the 615. Welcome to the brunch. What's your name and what's on your mind this morning?
Hey, what's up? It's Mike. How you doing, Timeless?
I'm doing all right. So how are you feeling today?
I'm good. I'm going to stay on subject real quick, and then I'll just jump in on other stuff as we go along. But speaking of that Milwaukee-Miami game, man, if you look at the numbers, the shooting was atrocious on both sides. Jimmy Butler shot the ball very poorly. Milwaukee shot the ball very, very poorly from three-point range. I mean, whichever team can shoot the ball a little better has a chance to take the advantage moving forward in that series. Duncan Robinson was the only guy that they really shot the ball well early. Duncan Robinson's going to be a problem if they don't come all the way out on him on that shot. Oh, boy, Middleton was stopping at the three-point line, just kind of planting right there. So they're going on, continuing to take those couple more steps out to really get in his face on his shots. And so I thought he was wild. And honestly, Middleton hit that big shot, but if you look at his shooting stats for the night, he didn't shoot the ball very well at all. That was one of the worst shooting games I saw yesterday, but it was still exciting.
Very interesting, Mike, because that's why I was going to wait for Eric to finish so I could get to that. Looking across the board, right, this game was exciting. I'm not going to lie. This game had its ups and downs because of you didn't know who was going to wake up out of their sleep. Listen to these numbers. Jimmy Butler, 4-for-22. He finished with 17. He had the deciding bucket in the fourth quarter to force overtime. He needed that bucket because at that point, he was at 15. He finished with the 17. That was the last bucket he scored. Bam Adebayo, 9 points, 4-for-15, and they just gave this guy $1.95. They just gave Bam a lot of money to come out here and perform. Now, obviously, I can't lie. The way that he performed in the bubble, he went off last year. I think a lot of this pressure came. I don't know if it's more or less the big of Brooks Lopez causing friction or if Giannis is in his face, but I don't think it could distort that much of his shot because he's been here. Now your experience is involved. You're going to have to progress to get better. Kendrick Nunn, 4-for-10, even though Kendrick didn't get a lot of opportunities, he's on the floor for 23 minutes at 10 points. The one guy that is absolutely bothering, Tyler Herro, 10 points, 2-for-10 from the three. Those two shots were threes. He was 4-for-4 from the free throw line. He is unacceptable at this point in time, the way that he's been shooting all season. And the crazy part is, you're in the postseason. It's kind of like a reset button. But here's what bothers me. Tyler Herro, I think, is from the Wisconsin area. So you're home. And some of the people may be in that crowd that, like, are for you. And I know that there's more Milwaukee fans, but there's some people that you know you probably paid a 5 or 10 or 15, however much, I don't know, but you got people there supporting you, and you're not coming out there playing. He had 19 minutes of play. If it wasn't for Goran Dragic to save these guys, Miami would have been blown out. Dragic off the bench had 25 points. He shot 10 for 17, 5 for 10 from three. Each one of those threes were necessary. I really want to thank Steve Nash. Steve Nash taught Dragic how to shoot these three balls and teach him, like, you know, possession basketball and when to make these type of aggressive shots, and he did them at the right time. If Dragic and Robinson did not play the way that they played, alluding off what Michael said, because Duncan Robinson was 7-for-13, and those were all threes, and he 3-for-3 from the free throw line and have a 24, they would have been cooked. Miami has a shot to win this series, and they don't know what's in front of them, and they were very close to stealing game one. Being on the other side of the ball, I don't like to pick.
Milwaukee from three-point range.
Right, I was I was going to Milwaukee now. One player that I don't like to pick on is Dante DiVincenzo, but he had a bad night shooting. He didn't really get too many opportunities. He's 1 for 5, 1 for 4 from three. That was the only shot that he hit. Middleton was 3 for 9 from three, but came up with the critical field goal to stretch the game to 109-107. He was 10 for 22 for shooting. Giannis had a 26 points, 18 rebounds, but was 10 for 27 for shooting, 6 for 13 for free throw shooting. Giannis's free throw shooting is so bad is what kept Miami in this game. He was missing free throws at the wrong time. P.J. Tucker had 18 minutes to play, 0 for 1, no points scored. Bobby Portis was out there 4 for 6, had a good night shooting field goal wise, and Pat Connaughton had 1 for 2 shooting. And this is, I don't think Pat should have had that low of a game, let alone only playing 10 minutes of play in this game, to say the least bit. But I give Milwaukee their credit. They pulled this one out, and I've been on different networks, including the Clubhouse as well, talking about Drew Holiday. He came up with a big steal late, but he fell asleep late scoring also. This is what I'm talking about. He had a 20-point, 11-rebound game, 9 for 18, 50% efficiency, but he was 0 for 5 from three-point land. This is exactly what I get into when I'm talking about, you know, him and knowing that he can do more. But he's efficient. I can't lie. 9 for 18, 50%. I can't get mad at that. But if they wanted to really slam the door on Miami, they all have to come to play. And this is in Milwaukee. Miami knows that they have to go in this game to try to steal at least game two to make this interesting going back home to Florida to try and save face for, you know, home court advantage. Because if so, they can actually breathe a little. But, you know, Milwaukee's not going to stop because they're going to want that game back from them. But this was an electric start to a game one, especially to start off the NBA playoffs. So I can't get too mad at that, the Bucks winning 109-107. Now, here, and this is funny because I'm stuck in the middle of two Laker fans, people. So please, people, bear with me, right? The Dallas Mavericks take care of business up against the Los Angeles Clippers, 113-103. Luka Doncic goes off for a triple-double. Mike, I'll let you set this one off. Your thoughts on the game of the Mavericks winning this matchup up against the Clippers, taking away home court advantage early in this series?
I think it's early. I think if you look, Luka had a big game against the Clippers early on in the playoffs last year. You know, I think that, honestly, the Clippers, the Mavericks have to get, the Mavericks have to get at least they're going to have to win two of the next three in order to really make it a series. I think Luka may be the best offensive player on the floor, but Kawhi, you know, obviously has something to say about that. I just feel like that Clippers roster is much deeper all around. You know, Dallas winning to me adds a little bit of intrigue to the series because, you know, I wanted to see what Luka and them could do, but I haven't seen enough yet to be convinced that we're going to have a long series as of yet.
Okay, Eric, your thoughts on this matchup? I know we were talking about it in the green room. The Clippers let go of home court advantage. The Mavericks more or less came out here with a seven-man front, but they played 10 people, but the other three did not score at all. And Melly, Cauley-Stein, and Dwight Powell, they all came in for single-digit minutes, and none of the three scored. Jalen Brunson actually scored 15. I feel like he's one of the electric pieces next to Luka. Your thoughts on this matchup?
Timeless. I actually, you know, we talked about this on the previous show. I was very high on the Dallas Mavericks coming into this series just because of what we saw in the bubble. It was basically just Luka Doncic, and they had a fighting chance to win that series, but obviously fell short because they're decimated with injury. Now they're healthy, and they match up against the Clippers really well. And you just mentioned Dwight Powell and Willie Cauley-Stein not getting those minutes and them still being able to win the game because these guys, they're going to be a huge part of this series going forward. And they just have a deep bench, and they have a lot of guys they're getting a good performance out of. Tim Hardaway Jr., I'd like to see him continue what he's doing. We know he can play like this. He's been kind of inconsistent throughout his career, but, you know, a great start to the series for him. Jalen Brunson as well, and Luka being Luka. So they, the Clippers are not going to be able to stop Luka Doncic. That's the thing. And Porzingis going for 14, you know, we all know he can play a little bit better. So for them to get the win on the road in the first game, you know, by 10 points, without the performance of their normal guys, like we mentioned, this is a very good sign for Dallas. So I think besides Kawhi Leonard and Paul George, they're going to need a lot of help. You know, Rondo had 11 points, but Batum had 11 points. They're going to have to get more out of these guys, especially Zubac, their center. You know, Marcus Morris also only went for 4 points in 33 minutes. They're going to need a lot more of that if they want to win this series. So I think the Clippers are in trouble, though. I really do, especially if they drop game two. They're really going to be in bad shape. But I think Dallas is extremely hungry right now. They have great team chemistry together. They're great. I mean, I'm not going to say greatly coached, but, you know, Carlisle, they are a good, well-coached team. He's been there for a while. And they're just hungry right now, and I see them being able to finish the Clippers off in six games.
I think Brunson and Hardaway are the two real big key pieces for Dallas. If Hardaway can be consistent with his shot, and Jalen Brunson can continue to step up, but those are the two pieces offensively that Dallas is going to have to get continuous projection. Sometimes Hardaway can run hot and cold, but those are the two guys that are going to have to be the big supporting cast for Luka on the offensive end. I don't trust Porzingis, you know, to be consistent. So those two guys are going to have to be key if Dallas is going to make going to win the series or make a long series out of it.
Now, it's interesting that you guys say the same players being Hardaway and Brunson, which is true. Hardaway had a 21-point night. Brunson had 15 to help. But I disagree. If those two step up and play the way that they're playing with the person that I'm going to say, the Clippers are done. They could end up getting swept. If Kristaps Porzingis can shoot better than 4-for-13, they will annihilate them. And the crazy part about it is he only had one block. Porzingis was a guy that was a protected friend in New York. And also, while he came to Dallas, he kind of made the transition and was in the paint. And knowing that he's a 7-foot-3 unicorn and everybody loves his potential, but for some odd reason on certain games, it just doesn't work. If he could come out, and there was one game that they played last year when they played the Clippers, he had a 36-point night. And I don't want to just say every night that Porzingis is going to go out and give them 36, because if they get 36 and 30 from Luka and the Clippers are done, this team will explode. But if Porzingis could go out there and get them an honest 22, 24 range, like in there, like that's 11 bucks if he could do that. Like I feel like I'm being fair with the number. Like, if he can step up and also get them more than a block, like, I feel like I'm asking for a lot, asking for more than one block, but if he could get, like, anywhere from 1 to 3 or 4 blocks, the Clippers are in trouble. You can tell he distorts a lot of shots while he's in the paint. They have him at the 5, but they move him all over the floor like he's a queen on a chessboard. And for Luka to keep this pace, to put up a triple-double night to deal with not only Kawhi, which is an electric defender, but also Paul George, everybody that was coming to D. Luka Doncic was in trouble. Luka had a situation where he kept screening he kept getting the guard screen, and he was set up with a big. He would just step back and throw a three up. He did it like 2 or 3 possessions in a row. I was like, if he does this, the Clippers are done. The Clippers are done. The Clippers fought their way back into this game. They tried their best. I have my questions. Just like Mike alluded to, one of the Morris twins had 4 points. 2-for-8 shooting, and it's bad that both of the Morris twins are doing bad on both sides. One of the Morris twins are doing so bad with the Lakers that I talked about it in another group as well.
The dude was 0-for-24 at one stretch from 3-point range for like a month.
That's insane for the Lakers. Like, and we'll get there. I'll get there. But it's bad that his brothers did. The both of them, I don't know what's up. Ever since you guys started sharing bank accounts, these are the issues. Kawhi was 9-for-22. I want to be fair. He's 4 shots off for 50%. He had a 26-point night, 10 rebounds. five assists. He had four steals. So Kawhi was trying to do his thing. PG, Paul George had 8 for 18. He was two shots away from 50%. So I want to be fair also, 23 points, 6 rebounds, 5 assists. And I feel like these guys have to give more to win. They have to know the importance of the situation. The crazy part is what they're going to do on the defensive side of the ball. Who's going to really man up and lock Luka up? Luka doesn't move at a pace that he's unguardable. He's playing at his pace. Speed him up or slow him down. One or the other has to happen. You can't just continue to watch him do what he does. And he's the younger player out of the two of you. You guys have more experience on the floor, let alone you guys have conference championship and NBA final MVP experience. So you know what it takes. Outside of these guys, Nick Batum is 50% shooting with 11.32 minutes on the floor. You also have Serge Ibaka, who had an interesting night. He only played 13 minutes, 8 points, 2 for 5. And the crazy part about it, he had an interesting block on Luka as he defended Luka well, and Luka tried to go to the lane with him, and Serge timed him so perfectly and pinned that shot off the glass. It's like, why do you guys not have Serge on the floor more? Like, what does Serge do? Are you guys wanting Serge out of there? I got to give Rondo credit. He was 3 for 6 from the field. He hit 3 threes. Those are the only shots that he made. 2 free throws to give him an 11-point night. His tempo was working, but right. And it's interesting that they can't figure this out. I say this. I said it last night. Dallas Mavericks win game one. They will win the series. They won game one. The Clippers are going to have to fight back and win one of these games in Dallas. I don't care what the Clippers do. I don't care what they do. If they win this series, I don't care. I don't believe them to be the team to make it the Battle of L.A. We're going to fall short somewhere, somehow. This may be the piece that kind of tips the scale, if you will. There's no way that they should be losing when they had the momentum and they're the 3 seed, and Dallas doesn't care being a 6 seed and going into L.A. They basically snatched the lollipop out of the kid's mouth. I'm sorry I have to use that analogy, but this is terrible. Tyronn Lue, you got questions to answer. PG and Kawhi, you guys have to take this serious. I don't know what else to say about this. You guys are in front of another buzzsaw, and his name is Luka Doncic, and I don't know what you're going to do. The next matchup I have here is the Boston Celtics visiting the Brooklyn Nets. Now, everybody was concerned at the early portion of the season on how they would get this done. They had their issues at the big man position, i.e. with DeAndre Jordan, and then they started getting pieces to come along. Shout out to LaMarcus Aldridge, who I feel sorry for because I wanted him to be at least able to play. He cannot play due to health issues, and this is why so that's the 4-5. I did say 3-6. So the 4-5 is the Mavericks Clippers. I'm sorry if I announced that the wrong way. But the next matchup, a lot of people had their issues with Brooklyn. And, with DeAndre Jordan suffering at the defensive end, a lot of people were having their opportunity to score easily. A lot of people had their questions about Brooklyn playing defense. And then that narrative kind of changed. And then the I think it was 5 or 7 games that they got to play together as the big three, they started doing their thing, and then everybody started getting injured. They started finding their way. Kyrie having an electric season, a 50-40-90 season at that. The Celtics started suffering injuries as well. Looking in the midst of this, as well as Jaylen Brown going down for the remainder of the season, makes it tough for the Celtics to try to compete. But the early portion of this game was very interesting. They went in at halftime with a lead, and after halftime, the Brooklyn Nets did not look back. They basically turned it on and kept the Celtics out of harm's way. I want to, talk about this and see how you guys feel about the first postseason game with the big three all playing together and playing well, too. I can't really get mad at everything that they did and trying to combat what Tatum came out and did. They did an efficient job in shutting him down. He was 6 for 20, 22 points, and he was their leading scorer. So they did what they can. My biggest issue looking at this is Kemba Walker, and it burns because he lives so close to me, or he's from the area that's so close to me. 5 for 16, 15 points on the game, 2 assists. and he's the point guard. The wild part about Kemba Walker is he's the guy that sets the table and is trying to keep these guys fed. It hurts me to see this because I think they might end up getting rid of Kemba. There's a lot of people out of the Boston area and Boston fans alike that don't want Kemba there any longer. I want to see how this pans out. But like I said, with the big three, KD had 32. Kyrie Irving had 29 on 11 for 20 shooting, 5 for 5 from the free throw line. James Harden was 5 for 13 from the field and 9 for 10 from the free throw line. As efficient as these guys were, KD was 11 for 12 from the free throw line, but he didn't shoot too well from the field. He was 10 for 25. But you can still tell they're still trying to find the camaraderie out there. But they got it to work and winning this game by double digits. I want to see how you guys feel about this game. Eric, I'll come to you first. Your thoughts on the Brooklyn Nets overcoming a deficit at halftime, down 6, and coming out and winning this by 11.
Yeah, Timeless, we were watching this game while we were talking on the phone together and going over some things. What I liked is the Brooklyn Nets found a way to play defense. So they held the team under 100 points. The Celtics are going to put up a valiant effort. I just think without Jaylen Brown, this is going to be a losing proposition for them. Kemba's going to have to go off like they did in that playoff game, and Tatum's going to have to go off like we've seen in the playoff game, if Boston even has a chance to win this series. And with that being said, I don't think it's realistic asking these guys to go off for 50 and 30 points apiece and then getting help from Marcus Smart and Williams and the supporting cast. So nonetheless, the Celtics made it interesting. They did have a lead at half. And, to lose 93-104 against this Brooklyn Nets team, that's not too bad of a feat, especially in Brooklyn. This is a team that has the potential to just blow you out of the water, and the Celtics held their own. So it was a good performance by the Brooklyn Nets. Durant, 32 points, Irving, 29, and Harden, 21. That's what you can ask of these guys night in and night out, and then their bench produced two for them. Blake Griffin, 20 minutes, only getting 1 point. I wasn't sold on them bringing him in. I don't think he's going to be too much of a difference maker at this point in his career. But, it is what it is. The Brooklyn Nets definitely had a great showing in my eyes because of the fact that they played defense. They shut the Celtics down, kept Kemba Walker under 20 points, and Tatum, he did his thing, but it's not enough. The Celtics are going to have these – unbelievable performances from these guys if they want to have a chance. So I think Brooklyn wins this series in 5.
Interesting. Mike, your thoughts on this game with the Brooklyn Nets winning this by double digits up against the Celtics?
So I'm going to say 11 points is kind of it was really a little wider than that in the fourth quarter. It was just kind of a closeout. Listen, if Jason Tatum doesn't shoot better than 30% from the field, they're going to barely go 4, and they're only going to go 4 because the series has to go that many. So Jason Tatum's going to have to shoot the ball better. The points were there, but it wasn't an efficient stat line at all for him. Boston didn't shoot the ball well, and I'm sure some of that has to do with Brooklyn's defense. I think we'll find out. But the couple things that really jumped out to me is how explosive this team is offensively. There was a point in the third quarter where Boston had closed it back to 3. It was 82-79. They went into a break. And then they had 1 minute and 18 seconds of basketball action before the next break, and Brooklyn put up 7 points in about 1 minute and 18 seconds. So that 3-point game became 10, and they never looked back. I mean, it got as much as 17, 18, 19 points in the fourth quarter, and they just kind of coasted to the finish after that. But if you look at the stats too, we were just talking earlier about the other game in the Eastern Conference, and we talked about the bad shooting. You talked about Giannis shooting free throws earlier. Brooklyn didn't leave very many points at all at the free throw line. These guys shoot their free throws. I don't know what the final number was. At one point it was 21 out of 22 for that team off the line. It sounds like they missed a couple more, but they were probably like 23 out of 26 or 24 out of 27 or something from the free throw line. I don't have the stats in front of me right now. But that team, you know, all of them hit their free throws, and if they're penetrating and getting to the line, they're going to be tough to come back on if you end up behind against this team. If this team plays any semblance of defense consistently throughout the playoffs, they're going to be hard to handle. I don't care what color jersey is on the other side. This team's just very, very explosive. You know, like I said, Boston has to shoot the ball better. They're a little down, missing Jaylen Brown. I'll be surprised if they go five.
I agree. I'd be surprised if this goes five. I said the brooms are out in this series. I still mean it. If Boston could come out game two and steal a game, that'd be the one to steal. I feel like Brooklyn could still go into Boston and steal both of those games. And knowing that Kyrie has people booing him, and well, the last time he went up in there, he burned sage to try to, like, you know, get rid of the bad energy, and went in there and did what he can do. You know what I'm saying? But this is a playoff situation where he has not one gun. And like a LeBron James, it's a LeBron James caliber player and another MVP caliber player next to Kyrie going to war right now. I really look at this interesting. If the Brooklyn Nets can get any production out of anybody outside of the big three, I find it very hard. I mean, very hard for the Celtics to do anything with them. I think the best player that they had outside of the big three was Harris. Harris had a 10-point night. He was 4 for 11 for shooting, 2 for 6 for 3. He needs to be more consistent. I'm bothered by his consistency. They were saying that he was a 50% three-point shooter. He's giving the opportunity. A lot of his shots, he's wide open, and I feel like he doesn't have that confidence to keep letting it go. Like, I could tell that they've been yelling at him, keep shooting the ball. It's like they shouldn't have to tell a shooter to keep shooting, but he's that guy for them. I was happy in accepting what Jeff Green was able to do defensively for the team, even though he shot one for four from the field, 1-3 he hit. But defensively, he was matched up all across the board, and he did a great job defending Jason Tatum. So they have what they need to do in this situation. I feel like the Celtics are in a bad scenario due to the injury of Jaylen Brown. Evan Fournier on that four can't be anybody, and they are playing him. So it's like, he was 3 for 10 from the field, and I don't even want to, like, get into his numbers, but just knowing that he's a mismatch from 1 to 3, he can't D Kyrie, he can't D Harden, and you don't even want to put him in front of KD or Harris he's floating through screens and stuff. So they got to pick their poison while he's out there on the floor. They're going to have to try and get somebody else out there on the floor to help them. But I feel like Boston is in an uphill scenario, and it can get ugly soon, or sooner than later, to say the least, Ben. But I actually, not to say this in a mean manner to both of you, because both of you said the same number, I think this is over in four. They will get swept. I feel like the Nets are coming for the title. They have to get rid of the Celtics as quick as possible so they can try to rest and practice. Like, I feel like that's the best thing that they could do to, like, build more on their chemistry.
I'll be honest with you, Tom. Even if Jaylen Brown was playing, I would have been surprised if they could have gone six. And so without him, it's different. And you look at those stat lines you just read. I mean, as long as these guys are on the court, Brooklyn's gonna get 80 points plus off the rip just from those three guys. So like you said, all you gotta do is get a little bit of production from the supporting cast, and they're gonna be hard to beat by anybody.
For sure. To say the least. So the next matchup I have is to end the night on this situation. The Portland Trail Blazers go to Denver and steal a game. We had two games in these first four where away team came into the home house and stole a game. But the Blazers soundly beat the Denver Nuggets 123-109. Mike, your thoughts on this game? I got to save the Colorado guy for last. On how this game went down, your thoughts on both sides of the spectrum, both the Nuggets and the Blazers. Can the Nuggets get back into this series is the big question right now.
I think they can, but the thing about this is, like, there was no defense played across the board. I think the Jamal Murray absence is really going to hurt Denver in the long run in this series, and it may end up hurting them sooner rather than later. I thought maybe it would tell on them in the second round. But, you know, the other thing is a guy that I think really fits well into this Portland team, you know, Houston did trade for him, and it didn't fit because they got rid of all their bigs in order to make it happen. But I think Robert Covington is a very underrated piece for Portland, and he's got a decent basketball IQ and knows how to flow in this system. But I think that Jokic is going to get his points, but they can make it hard on him. Do I think they can get back in the series? Yes. I mean, obviously a significant disadvantage dropping game one at home, and we know that Portland is a tough place to play. I said going into this series that I thought Portland would find a way to win it, and I still believe that. I think probably six games.
Okay, I'm going to go next because I kind of want to leave the Colorado guy out of this fight. This is bad for Denver, and I feel like it's bad and it's an unfortunate situation that they're dealing with not only a injury, they're dealing with injuries and trying to go to war with a team that really is going in there with their hair on fire and not playing with a care in the world right now due to the fact that Jamal Murray had a season-ending injury, and not only is he out, but you have Barton out as well. So they are going to war with what they have. They do have a good amount of pieces on this team that make a difference, but it's not like the Jamal Murray. And a guy that could score at a clip like him, but he's not been given any opportunity, is Marcus Howard out of Milwaukee, but he's young. It's not like you're going to put a youthful player out there and get him to go out there and shoot at a clip like Jamal would. They're starting Austin Rivers. Austin Rivers, in 33 minutes played, had 6 points. 2 for 6 shooting from the field and 1 for 5 from three. A lot of people were out there saying that Austin Rivers is so questionable, you don't know what you're going to get. I think his best situation was when he was playing in Houston with James Harden and company, and he was making a difference out there. But he's been in so many different scenarios that they were like, even his father didn't want him to play for him while he was with the Clippers. So it's like, Arthur Rivers, you have to step up. You played with Coach K. You played with your father. You've been a journeyman throughout the league. 2 for 6 and a trigger man. Like, I don't know how they're looking at you. And then Campazzo is a point guard. He's a table setter. He's not going to be one that's going to score the ball. They are lacking big time at the guard position. I do not think Denver gets back into this series. I think Portland will end up taking care of business early. I think this goes as far as 5 or 6. I really want to say 6 to see Denver win a game or two, but I feel like they're out of their element. Jokic is what they focused on. This is what the Blazers statement was after the game. Let Jokic go off and don't let anybody else do anything. Michael Porter Jr. did do work. He had a 25-point night. He was 1 for 10 from 3. So he was ice cold outside of the paint. So, or from the perimeter. Let me just more or less just say the perimeter. But he shot 12 for 21. He had 9 rebounds as well. 2 blocks. This guy he's another unicorn floating around. Aaron Gordon had a 7 for 16 night, 16 points, 8 rebounds as well. But everything else across the board, Paul Millsap, the guy that they're hanging on to for God knows what reason, 3 points, 1 for 2 for 3, 15 minutes played. Jermichael Green had 0 points, 18 minutes played. Like, this is bad across the border. And Monte Morris had a 10-point night as well, 5 for 10 shooting from the field, 50%. So that's a good, efficient night. But it's like, you're going to need some type of guard to go to war with Damian Lillard and C.J. McCollum. 14 points from your backcourt combined, like I don't know what they're going to do. I want to see how this goes down. Eric, I know you're the Colorado guy. You're out there on the ground there. I mean, your thoughts on the scenario out there in Colorado, I guess the emotions of people around you. I mean, your thoughts on this situation as the Blazers cruise in this matchup. And oh, also, by the way, a welcoming party for Carmelo Anthony, who shot 6 for 12, 50% from the field, 4 for 8 for 3, And they booed him as soon as he got on the floor. The first thing he did was hit back-to-back threes to kind of hush them up. He was 5 for 5 at one point in the first half and had like 15 points out the gate. So they keep egging him on. That was his gym at one point. But, Eric, your thoughts on this matchup?
Yeah, Denver needs to realize that booing people when they get on the court and touch the ball never works in their favor, as they've seen with Kobe Bryant for years in and years out. So you got to watch that. That adds motivation to these players. And Carmelo did have a great night. Anthony Simmons had a good night. It was an overall performance by the Portland Trail Blazers, and no defense from Denver. No defense at all. This is traditionally a really good defensive team. And they collapsed on the defensive side of things, and you're right. I agree here. They are out of their element. You know, losing Jamal Murray was big enough, and then losing Barton, that was just the icing on the cake. And just we just talked about their backcourt. 14 points combined? Come on. You're not going to win playoff games like that. And, I mean, the Denver Nuggets can get back into the series. We've seen this team down 3-1 twice last year in the bubble. But, again, with that being said, this isn't the same team that they had on the floor last year. So it's unfortunate for the Nuggets. The fans here are pretty bummed out. It's been depleted. You know, they were already pretty depleted with Jamal Murray going down, and then with Barton, it's, you know, everybody's already counting them out down here. And Portland is a very hungry team. They turned it on towards the end of the season. And if they're getting good if they can get performances – from their bench like they did, especially Carmelo and Simmons, this team's going to be a tough out for any team in the Western Conference just because of the fact they have Damian Lillard. You know, he needs to win an MVP at some point. It was good that this is on national television, so people actually got to see how good this guy really was last night. And, yeah, it's not looking promising for the Nuggets, so I see them losing this game, this series in six like you, Thomas.
I feel bad because it's like they were one of the teams that I felt that were on their way, could try to shake this thing up and be a team to fight to the Western Conference Finals. And they aren't that team because Jamal Murray, one of their leaders, is down. And Will Barton is out too. So it's like they're missing at least two guys with experience that could go out there and run and gun to make this interesting. But they can't. I wonder what Malone is going to try to do on the fly. This is so awkward to watch Jokic have that kind of night. 34 points and them lose soundly. They lost by 14. He's 34 and 13 assists, even though he only had two. No, I got that wrong. I'm saying that wrong. That was Damian Lillard's stat line. Excuse me. Jokic had 34 and 16 rebounds and one assist. So they said they were trying their best to keep him from playmaking, and they did that because one assist, I mean, he's usually trying to put up close to triple doubles or having a triple double night as a big. They shut down everything that they could. Michael Porter Jr. was the only one that kind of escaped the island, but everybody else is basically held in check. And if Malone can't figure this out on the fly, I feel like this is an uphill battle for Denver. I feel like Portland was at ease and Denver felt no pressure. At one point in the fourth quarter, it really looked like Denver gave up, and all Portland was doing was just throwing up three after three, after three, and they could not stop the barrage. And it's not like everybody on Portland was hot. So it was like this is a game where they took care of business, and I don't feel like everybody was on their game. CJ had an 8 for 20 night. Jokic was 7 for 10. I got to give him credit there. Norman Powell, Cuzzo, he had 10 points, 3 for 11 for shooting, but he was on the field, on the floor for 37 minutes and efficient on the defensive end as well. But I feel like Portland could have done even more damage if everybody was playing well. Cantor went 1 for 2 on the floor, 2 points scored, and he's an efficient scorer and rebounder. So, say that again. I'm sorry.
You just said something there that I don't really understand. Like, I mean, I understand what you're saying, but you look at those stats, and to me, Denver, especially after Murray went down, Denver was playing best when that offense was going through Jokic. And for them to even make this a series at all, he's going to have much more than one assist per game, man, because they don't have the consistency from their perimeter players at all right now. And so he's going to have to step up in all three of those categories. You just said sometimes he has close to triple-double numbers. And he's going to have to average that or come close to that in any games that Denver's going to have a chance to win.
I totally agree with you. I can't be even more in agreement with you. But I wonder how he's going to do that if he doesn't believe in these guys because the opportunities are given to him right now. Like, that's kind of like putting a dog in front of a cake and nobody around. You see what I'm saying? Like, if Jokic is given the opportunity to score, who's not going to try to score the ball? You see what I'm saying? So does he pass in those opportunities when it's gold for him? So, and to believe in his backcourt, like, somebody has to step up. I don't know if it's Campazzo or Rivers, but they got to try and help this guy. This is insane that they're going against a scoring backcourt.
Yep.
And CJ and Dame, these guys combined put up 55, and I felt like both of these guys could have shot better. Dame was 10 for 25. He missed 15 shots. Just imagine if he had another five. Or let me just be fair, another two or three.
Yeah, 40% shooting, and they still won by 14. And their best player
right,
shot 40% from the floor.
That's what I'm saying. Like, if he gets even hotter, like, Denver is in a bad scenario. Like, this can get ugly very quick. I do not think Denver wins this series. I think this is a situation where they're already at home. They will be going home soon. I think this, as far as it goes to six, I feel like they could get finished earlier. I don't think this goes seven or anything long or lengthy. I think six would be the longest this goes. Okay, so we are at the midway point.
Especially this could be a sweep situation if they, you know, I mean, having Paul Millsap and Green going for 3 points combined, that's going to be a problem. If these guys play like that, they're done. It's, I mean, they could get swept.
I feel the same way. I feel the same way. I feel like they could get swept, too. I don't like using that lightly, but people are getting mad at me by me saying people are going to get swept. So I got to watch what I say. But the intention is there. Like I feel like this can happen. I don't know who it is going to be to step up, whether it's Millsap or one of these guards. Somebody has to help Jokic other than MPJ in a situation where this coach does not somehow believe in MPJ. They've been limiting him all season, and he's been the only one to help Jokic in a serious time of need. We are at the midway point of the show. The call number is 929-477-2759. Continue to share our link. Tweet it as well if you're on Twitter. Let everybody know the kitchen is wide open for the time of Sunday morning brunch. At the midway point of the show, we are going to talk about the games that are set to take place today. The first matchup we have are the Washington Wizards going to visit the Philadelphia 76ers in South Philly. The Wizards had to save themselves winning their play-in game up against the Pacers, putting up an electric night to save themselves. This is a very interesting matchup because it's like, which way do you want to go? Do you want to go Embiid and let him go crazy and stop everybody else? Or do you force the issue at the backcourt of the Wizards and let them kind of try to overpower what the Sixers are going to try to do defensively? And I know more than likely they will end up trying to put Ben Simmons on either Russ or Beal because he is the longer, lengthy defender that can actually move well at his size. So I wonder if they put the length in front of them. I'll come to you first, Eric. Your thoughts on this matchup as it takes place 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, the Washington Wizards up against the 76ers of Philadelphia.
Yeah, the 76ers are definitely one of the teams other than Brooklyn that – is favored to go all the way to the come out of the East to the NBA Finals. But, you know, you can't count out the Wizards, Timeless. This is a really good team. They got Bradley Beal and Russell Westbrook. And if those guys are playing at their A game and they get good production from Mish Smith, Robert, Robin Lopez, Hachimura, this could be a problem. They just need to figure out a way to stop Embiid. That's going to be the main thing. So I don't know if Hachimura is going to be up to that task. But if they keep him in check, the Wizards can make this series interesting. We've all talked about the road woes that the Philadelphia 76ers have. So they're going to have to jump out to an early 2-0 series lead to be comfortable because we all know that this team is not comfortable playing on the road. So if they haven't changed that, it's going to be a problem. But we'll get to see her soon. This series starts today, and it should be a really good series. Look for the Sixers to come out on top, though, in six games.
Mike, you know, we talked about this in great length for a while now. The time is here. Your thoughts on the series? What do the Sixers have to do to take care of business, or what do the Wizards have to do to make this a series or try to steal this from the number one seed?
I think the most interesting piece to this is, and you kind of alluded to it already, is who do they put Ben Simmons on? Are they going to try to put him in front of Westbrook and see if they can limit some of that explosion, or are they going to put him on Bradley Beal and harass the jump shooter? I think one of the other things that we really want to look for very early on in this game is, what does Bradley Beal look like health-wise? I understand he came back and had a decent game for them in that performance against the Wizards. He did not look very good health-wise a couple of nights previous against the Boston Celtics. So is Bradley Beal continuing to heal up, and how is he? You know, I just think that the Wizards have two weapons in Westbrook and Beal. They do have a little bit of a supporting cast. I think the 76ers, I mean, listen, the way the bracket was set up, they couldn't have asked for better. They got the best three teams in the East on the other side. To Eric's point about playing on the road, the one thing that I will say is Washington is one of the friendly is a pretty friendly confine to go. It's not going to be an extremely hostile environment for them to go play in. I think you're going to see a decent amount of 76ers fans make that trip down there possibly to support that team. I think the 76ers, I think some of their offensive deficiencies are going to tell on them as the Eastern Conference playoffs continues to unfold. Unfortunately for the Wizards, I don't think it's going to be in this series. I think it could go six, but I right now think probably five for the Sixers. I think that, like I said, some of their other deficiencies are going to tell on them later, but I don't think it's going to happen in this series.
So this is interesting because I think that Russell and Beal could put just as much pressure on the Sixers that a lot of people are not giving them credit to do. This matchup happened this season with Russ added to his team, and when Beal came back, Bradley Beal had his career-high game that he's ever scored. He had a 60-point night up against this very Sixer team. So that potential is there for them to steal a game or two or make this a game six or seven situation. A lot of people are thinking that they're going to get steamrolled. I don't think so. The question mark is if this backcourt could slow Russing them down and for them also to hit shots too, because the question still remains, who will step up outside of Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid? And I question the consistency from Ben Simmons because there's those nights where he falls asleep. He can't fall asleep right now because these guys can steal it. You got a hungry Russell Westbrook, a coach in Scott Brooks that knows what it takes to take these type of games away, and Bradley Beal with, like, one life to live situation and more or less try to steal this one. So I'm worried for the Sixers. The Sixers better not take this lightly. Of course, Joel Embiid is a constant. He's probably going to have to go off for like 50 or 60 for them to just annihilate them. But I feel like if they keep Embiid to like a 30, 35-point night and kind of corral everybody else, this is a winnable situation for the Washington Wizards. But the spread is at 8, I feel like they will win. The spread is at 8, I feel like they will win their first game out the gate. But I feel as if the Washington Wizards get used to their style of play, they can make this a very interesting series.
I'm not convincing them to beat me with a jump shot. I'm serious. I'm playing 5-on-4 on the defensive end. I'm making Ben Simmons beat me shooting the ball. I'm taking away the penetration from him. I'm playing a step off. I'm going to make him beat me with the jump shot. Otherwise, some other guys are going to have to step up. But, that's the one thing is every once in a while, other than Embiid, Philly can really, really struggle offensively. And we know that those Washington guards can't score in bunches. So it definitely has the potential to be interesting.
Yeah, Eric, I heard you trying to say something.
Timeless. Just to echo what you were saying, this is a real dangerous situation for the Sixers. Because this Washington Wizards team, look at, they started out so poorly. Everybody was counting them out at the beginning of the season, and they clicked. Scott Brooks got these guys all to play good together. Their chemistry is there. And Russell Westbrook and Bradley Beal are a major problem. Just because what you just said, Ben Simmons is inconsistent. These guys are better in my eyes right now, the way they're playing, than the Embiid-Simmons combination, especially if these guys go off. It's going to be a long day for the Sixers, so they're really going to have to focus on shutting both of them down, especially if the Wizards get their role players going. I mean, this could be, you know, it could work out in this Wizards' favor of winning the series in six, especially if they're able to steal a win today. It's, you know, time to be worried.
You're right. This is the opportunity to catch them sleeping, especially with them with a play-in game. They got experience of being on the floor later, or more or less as recent as the Sixers have not played. So we will see as they enter South Philadelphia. I am intrigued by how this one goes down. Now, Sports City, please help me. If you have people out there, please call in. 929-477-2759. And the reason why I'm begging is because I need help at this time right now. Please, somebody help me, because the game that follows this one, I'm surrounded by Laker fans, and I don't like this. The Los Angeles Lakers are playing the Phoenix Suns in the 2-7 matchup. Now, here goes an interesting situation that I was told last night. For the series win, right? For the series win, Lakers are favored -160, right? The Suns are the underdog and +145. Now, to me, I feel like the Lakers have the significant edge having LeBron James and Anthony Davis. It's something about Chris Paul and the way that he turned the things around for the Suns that made it an awesome season for the Phoenix Suns, but I feel like the buck will potentially stop here. But with Las Vegas putting those numbers out, is making it extremely scary to understand what the Suns could end up doing to the Lakers if the Lakers take this anything but lightly. So I want to hear how you guys feel about this. I don't feel comfortable because it's going to be an LA-LA situation. I don't know which one of them is going to go even worse than the other, but it's going to be hectic pretty soon. I kind of want to throw a jump ball up, but I got to have some type of chill to the camaraderie that's about to happen here. So, Eric, I'll go to you first. Your thoughts on the Lakers as they take on the Suns. And the Suns are favored by 2 at this point. Last night it was 3, so the number is decreasing. Your thoughts on this matchup?
We talked about it a little last night. And, you know, you have more confidence than I do. Yes, of course, the Lakers on paper should, you know, I'm not going to say easily win this series, but it shouldn't be a concern. And this is another thing where the Lakers, if they're not on their A game and they're not taking it seriously, the Phoenix Suns could win this series, especially if the Suns are firing on all cylinders, getting performances from Mikal Bridges, Ja Crowder, Devin Booker, and Chris Paul are going to be a problem no matter what. Cameron Payne. If these guys go off, it's going to be a problem for the Lakers. The only question is, how are the Suns going to stop Anthony Davis and LeBron James? Because these guys are pretty much, it's really hard to guard them. So Ja Crowder is going to have his hands cut out. Dario Saric, I don't think he's up to the challenge. He's going to have his, you know, work cut out for him. And it all depends on the Lakers bench, man. KCP, Dennis Schroeder, Alex Caruso has been, and he's turned into an unsung hero for the Lakers. If it wasn't for this guy, they would have never beat the Golden State Warriors. See, I mean, he just played out of his mind in the fourth quarter, defensively and offensively. So Caruso is going to be a huge part. Kyle Kuzma, you know, has been, all year long, he's been inconsistent. So he's going to need to be firing on all cylinders. They're going to have Harrell firing, and it's going to be a total team effort for the Lakers to win this series. Do not take the Phoenix Suns lightly. Their record shows how good this team is. It's not a fluke. Chris Paul has came and completely turned this team around. Great facilitator. He's got the experience. And he has all these young guys playing at top level right now. So if the Lakers fall asleep, this could be a problem for them. And the Lakers start off on the road, so they're going to need to come out firing, and they're going to need to come out firing fast. Otherwise, this game could get away from them early.
Okay, Mike, you're the next Laker fan to go. Your thoughts on how this goes down? Do you agree with Derek actually trying to be modest about the situation, if you will?
So I 100% agree with Eric. Nice job on mentioning this, the supporting cast. You saved some work for me. You heard the supporting cast on both sides. I do think that this Lakers roster is deeper. I think that the Lakers have the potential to really give Chris Paul a little bit of problems on the defensive end with the length that they can throw at him. We just saw, even before he was starting to really round back into shape, you know, Anthony Davis's sort of I'm back moment came against the Suns. He dropped 42 last time out. There's not a whole lot that the Suns could throw at him to defend him. I think that you'll see a combination of lineups from the Lakers. I think you, at times in clutch time and in different moments, I think you'll see the Lakers go small and put Davis at the five with LeBron and Kuz and a couple of guards. Dennis Schroeder has to play a little bit better than he played in that play-in game for them to be all right. And, I mean, I think he can't play that bad two games in a row, can he? I think if the Lakers get one of the first two, and I think they're probably going to get this one today, but if they get them both, Phoenix is in deep, deep trouble. If they get one of the first two, I think the Lakers could still win this game, this series, in five, maybe six at the most. I agree with you, though. They can't fall asleep. The Suns went 8-0 in the bubble last year, so they started to show that they were ready, which is why they went out and got this last piece. And Chris Paul, love Monty Williams. He's one of my favorite coaches in the NBA, not just because of his coach, but just as a man. He's a man that I have a whole lot of respect for and the way he carries himself. I'm very happy for the Suns' season. I can tell you that playoff LeBron, you know, we talk about playoff Rondo, but LeBron finds a different gear and a different level of concentration. If the Lakers lock in on the defensive end of the court, I think they're going to make life very hard on the Phoenix Suns, and I think it's going to be a short series. You're right, Eric, 100%. If they fall asleep, this is a series that could get away from them and get away from them in a hurry simply because of the talent on the other side. I don't think that's going to happen. The only thing that can happen, I believe, for the Suns to win this series, other than the Lakers falling asleep, is some sort of health issue. I just do not think that this is a good matchup for the Suns, and I think the Lakers should win the series. And I think they're going to come out and try to set a tone today on the Suns' home floor.
Okay, calling in from across the pond, the co-host of the NFL Free-for-All and Draft Guru, Mr. Jones Rodri. Welcome to the Brunch Hour. How are you feeling this afternoon for you?
Yeah, afternoon. And I heard you put the bat signal up there. I heard you was getting ganged up on by Laker fans. So I thought I'd call in and give you a hand. Just looking at the matchup, guys, I'm excited. But to me, it's all going to come down to Devin Booker, I think. If Devin Booker gets over 25 points, I'm thinking the Phoenix Suns can take this one. They're a 2-point favorite now, on the market with the bookies. So I think it's Devin Booker's time to step up or don't, you know. But I think Chris Paul is a great guy to have on his team to take a lot bit of pressure off him. They got a D up on Devin Booker. I think that's the key matchup for me tonight.
That is one of the key matchups, yes.
Yeah. I don't know. It's playoff basketball, right? I mean, I'll ask you guys a question. How different is it from regular season basketball? You're at the playoffs. You've got a bit of a series. You know, is it a big difference like in football?
Well, everything kind of turns on. I think more or less better defense is being played, as in regular season is kind of like we'll try to go through the motions to stay in front of you, and we'll, you know, not try to foul as much and try to risk injury. Now it's like, this is win or go home, man. Go hard or go harder, you know. So, of course, it's significant as football, but they know that they have a tomorrow. But it gets stronger of a tougher scenario, if you will, when they're facing that third win. If that team has a third win, that whoever's facing that, they're going to play every possession tough. Every time they try to get on the offensive end, they're going to try and score, you know, as efficient as possible. So the aura is there. I think football is more dangerous because it's a one and done when it's the playoffs. There's no tomorrow. NBA, when they're doing their thing, it used to be a game five or a series of five, excuse me, in the first round, and then they would play the seven games after that. But now it's given game seven here. So I know that they have it tomorrow, but if they're facing elimination, a lot of these teams play a little harder. But I think in the postseason, especially in any general form of sports, everything steps up or increases as time goes on.
Time to his question I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say to your question,
in playoff basketball, you know, kind of like time says, it's more like every possession matters. A lot of times in playoff basketball, too, because you see more focus on that efficiency, the game kind of slows down. More efficient possessions, teams really trying to make sure they're running sets and not wasting possessions. But it is definitely a different level, like the competition level. I mean, you know, people taking fewer plays off, and it's definitely a – the bar definitely raises as far as the competitiveness on every possession come playoff time.
And that is exactly why, gentlemen, I firmly believe the Lakers are going to be 18-time world champions, especially if LeBron and Anthony Davis remain healthy. It's, you know, they get the Suns are a threat, yes, but in all actuality, the Lakers should win every series. They match up against everybody. They match up easily against the Nets and the Sixers. They'll be able to shut the Sixers down. They'll be able to slow them down if they're playing the defense that we're used to seeing them play. But the main thing with the Lakers is consistency.
Somebody come help me. It's starting right now. Please, it's happening. They're turning into thriller monsters as I speak. Anything else on this series before we do get away from it? I feel like this is going to be a very electric situation with Vegas looking at this more or less evenly odded out. I don't know which way to go. Now, I'm going to say this, and this is a brutal situation, but I have to. Paul's last hurrah for any type of championship move, unless he really does go to a contender or a title winner, if he's going to do this. I feel like this team right here, he has young guns that don't know where they are. They more or less could just go in there with their hair blazing and try to take people out. But they are number two seed for a reason. You got to respect them. I feel bad in saying this. This is Chris Paul's last run at probably making a scenario, getting to an NBA final where he's never been. He's never been to an NBA final. So if you want to see that, hope and pray for it to happen. Vegas actually thinks that this is a close series. I feel like this could be a scenario where the Lakers take care of business, knowing that LeBron and AD are there, and I don't really think that there's anybody in the state of Arizona that could check these guys. So prove me wrong, Phoenix. Prove me wrong. And then Chris Paul, even though he's been in his ups and downs and hearing so much news about him, I will never leave Chris Paul's side ever since I heard how his story began with his grandfather and that 61-point night he had in high school, and that was how old his grandfather was because he died on the night of his basketball game and he walked off the court when he got 61. So I will never leave Chris Paul, even though he's been in a lot of stuff and talk junk about. He's been on the other side of the spectrum every time my boys played, whether he was at Wake Forest or New Orleans or the Clippers or Houston. I mean, he came to OKC, so that was great last year for one season, and then went out to Phoenix. But, when it's all said and done, I can't lie that I do love and respect Chris Paul ever since that day he played that high school game. Okay, so the next matchup we have, it's very entertaining and exciting because I live right here. I'm about 40 minutes away from Midtown Manhattan, but the Atlanta Hawks are visiting the New York Knicks, in which the Knicks have not been to the playoffs. That's right. I said the playoffs. Wait, I don't know if y'all heard me. I said
playoffs? Don't talk about playoffs. You kidding me? Playoffs? I just hope we can win a game.
Yeah. I said playoffs, Jim. They have not been to the playoffs since 2013, and these people are out here in Manhattan dancing in the streets in the middle of March when they were looking good. So just imagine what it's going to look like today in Midtown Manhattan, especially as it gets closer to 7 p.m. when that game goes down. I think that streets might be empty out there in New York. Now, I'm lying. Those streets will never be empty in New York City. But I think it'll be a lighter percentage of people out there in the streets just knowing that they have not been playoff relevant in a while. What are your guys' thoughts on this matchup as the Atlanta Hawks go to face the Knicks in the more intriguing series in the Eastern Conference? I'll come to you first on this one, Eric.
Yeah, Timeless, excuse me. This is going to be a really good series. These teams are evenly matched. They both have a good starting cast and a bench, good role players. Trae Young is going to do his thing. John Collins, and if John Collins and DeAndre Hunter have a big series and they're able to contain Julius Randle, that's going to be huge. With that being said, I see this series going seven games, Timeless. I mean, I see this going back and forth. The addition of Derrick Rose was huge for the New York Knicks because Emmanuel Quickley is kind of shaky. They got him help with Derrick Rose. Alfred Payton, same thing. So bringing in Derrick Rose kind of helps that. But they're going to need to have a big game from RJ or a big series from RJ Barrett. Noel New Orleans is going to have to go off. Reggie Bullock's been doing his thing all year. Him and Julius Randle have been holding this team down. But they're going to have to find a way to stop Collins and Hunter and take them out of the game, because Trae Young, if he's firing on all cylinders, facilitating this offense, Nate McMillan is a great coach. He's got the experience. He's completely elevated these guys. And like we talked about when he first came to Atlanta, is he going to be able to help Trae Young develop into the leader that we know he can and should be of this team? And he's definitely taken a step in that direction. Trae Young has taken that leap as well. So this is going to be a very exciting series. But I do see the Knicks edging them out in seven games.
Okay, Rodri, I know that you've come out here and spent some time in Manhattan. I'm not sure if you've been to Georgia to see what it's like in Atlanta, but your thoughts on this matchup, the Atlanta Hawks visiting the New York Knicks, who do you like in the matchup?
Yeah, I think anybody from UK, Europe has come to New York. You know, you end up by Penn Station, but there you end up by Madison Square Garden. You can't avoid it, right? So it's like, to me, that's always been basketball's mecca. You know, that's where people associate basketball with, is the Garden. You know, you got the Boston Garden and you got the Madison Square Garden. It's like, it's the home of the New York Knickerbockers. You know, everybody knows the Knickerbocker glory. They know about the Knicks. They know who the Knicks are. They wear the shirts. You know, they wear the Patrick Ewing shirts, and they know the history of the team. But it's not even it hasn't been a basketball powerhouse for such a long time. And I don't think I like the NBA, and I like the way I grew up with the NBA, and I think the New York Knickerbockers are part of that, you know, part of the NBA. I mean, the Nets are in Brooklyn now, so it's like there's another team in New York. There's always, I know, the New Jersey and stuff, but it's like it's different, right? I mean, the New York Knicks are traditional. It's like traditional NBA basketball. So for me, just to see the Knicks get it done, Nate McMillan was with the Indiana Pacers, right, last year, so good for him. I think it's a good quick turnaround for him. He started to win after losing that spot, so good job that he's done that. But to be honest, you know, I'd like to see the Knicks be successful. They're 1-point favorites tonight. There's so much talent on every team, on these courts, in these playoffs. But it could be whoever wanted the most in the series. I can see it going all the way. It's that tight, you know. First game off the bat, it's a 1-point game. So it's I think it's come down to who wants it the most. Are New York going to spend money and go and see these Knicks? I hope they do because, you know, I think New York needs it at the moment. Everybody needs it. You know, everybody needs a winning team right now after this pandemic. So let's see what the turnout is and let's see who wins it. But, yeah, you know, I associate the New York Knicks with basketball. There's no question about that. I think everybody who loves the game of basketball does as well. And, you know, like the NCAA, I haven't watched that now this during this pandemic. It really gave basketball a bit of a name over here in the UK. I think basketball is as big as it's ever been right now. So, you know, over the next 5 years, we're only going to see it grow even more. So, to me, it's up to New York to put a stamp on this tournament. Now you can call it not playoffs. It is a new tournament. It's a new day, and let's see where they go. Yeah, excited for the game. I'm excited to watch some playoff basketball.
This game and series is so tight. The game today is a pick 'em. It's not even a 1-point or a half hook. This is a pick 'em. Outstanding. Hey, if the Knicks want to be in the postseason, y'all got to do something right now. Mike, your thoughts on this one, how this goes down. The Georgia boys versus the Yankees, if you will, the Knicks of New York.
You know, first of all, big ups to both of these teams and what they've been able to accomplish this year. I told you going into the season that both of them would have made the playoffs. You'd have probably had me go get drug tested. And then when you see both of them making the playoffs, you would have said, well, 7 and 8 seeds. So big up to both of these teams taking a big step forward. You know, that's a credit to Nate McMillan, as you guys talked about, and also Tom Thibodeau. I mean, people could say a lot of different things about Mr. Thibodeau, but the man can coach. What it really comes down to, I do think that offensively, I think that the Hawks are probably the better team on the offensive end. The Knicks play better defense. You know, the interesting thing is there's been some talk about whether or not the Hawks believe John Collins is the future. John Collins talked about wanting that bag. Well, let me tell you something. If he shows up big and can outplay Julius Randle in this series, I'm not saying he will, but if he can, he'll have a big case for that next contract. What it really comes down to me, A, home court advantage, the Knicks having that home court advantage. But usually when it's a toss-up like that, I'm going to usually put my money on the team that plays better defense. I think that Tom Thibodeau and the Knicks will make enough defensive adjustments to make it difficult on the Hawks in clutch times or in times where it really matters. And I think that some of the Hawks' lack of production on the defensive end will probably be what tells on them before this series is over. I believe it will go 6 or 7 games probably. I like the Knicks in the series. I think I like the Knicks to get it started on a positive note for them today and win that game down in Madison Square Garden in the Mecca of basketball, if you will, to start this series off. The Hawks will definitely catch some fire and bring them a lot of smoke, but eventually the Knicks will deal with it over the course of the 7-game series.
This is a very interesting series, people. I'm not going to lie. I am not a fan of either of these teams, but I favor the Knicks. I've said potential sweep because of the aura around this area. It's been almost a decade since the Knicks have been in a postseason game. I repeat, it has been almost a decade since the city of New York has seen playoff basketball other than across the bridge in Brooklyn. Other than Brooklyn. And you know everybody out here can't wait to say, go New York, go New York, go. Put the orange and blue on. They were dancing in the middle of the street in the winter coats and all, because the Knicks were playing good basketball at that point in time and got as high as a 4th seed and where they are at now. I think the Knicks could pull this off. I think Thibodeau is the strongest defensive mind and all the experience that he has. Nate McMillan is a great coach, great to deal with experience, but he's, for some odd reason, he falls short. I know that they may have the potential to steal a game or two, but I favor the Knicks. I think the Knicks could walk away with this one. There's so much energy. Crazy part about it is Julius Randle might get either most improved or they try to throw him in the midst of MVP talk, but I doubt if he's any type of MVP. But you got Derrick Rose coming off of that bench, and as soon as Derrick Rose either does a crossover or scores an interesting bucket, it's infectious. I look at Derrick Rose like Stripe, and the Knicks are the gremlins. Do not feed those gremlins. They go crazy when Derrick Rose does anything, and it's like their energy just goes to a high just watching the Knicks do it. And I just want to see Derrick Rose be successful, man. All of the injuries and everything that he's been through, and for him to be the experienced leader of the team, they also have a scoring leader and a face of the organization right now with Julius Randle being the all-star of the team too. So I feel like they got way more guns to go to war with Atlanta, let alone they play defense and can strap up. And knowing that it's going to be electric in that Madison Square Garden where Michael Jordan himself claimed that arena the mecca of basketball, I don't think Atlanta escapes today. They may make this an interesting one. I feel like the Knicks have the potential to pull the brooms out. I repeat, this may end up being four, but I feel like the Hawks have potential to go back home and steal a game. But if not, if the Knicks are playing defense the way that they've been playing all season long, I don't trust Trae Young by himself with players down also. They don't have everybody. So there's people out of that lineup, and let alone when they put Gallinari on the floor. I don't know if he's going to be D'Angelo Julius Randle. I think that's a mismatch as soon as Julius Randle touches the ball. If Julius Randle and Gallinari are matched up, it's a mismatch already. I'm going Knicks today, and I feel like the Knicks will take care of business in this series. The last matchup as we get ready to close the show, the Grizzlies are going up against the Utah Jazz, in which the Utah Jazz are the number one seed. The Grizzlies had to win their play-in up against the Warriors. I called it before the game went down. I'm sitting on that one. I loved every last bit of that. But I am from Connecticut, a state in the United States of America. And the leader of the Utah Jazz has not played ball in at least 2 months, maybe three. But Donovan Spider Mitchell is back. And he's a Connecticut kid from across the border in Greenwich. And I support him because I have people that met him and things of that nature. And it's going to be exciting because it's like, who wants it more? Ja Morant playing with his hair on fire and going after Steph, or Donovan Mitchell taking that interview personally when Shaq called him out and said he's not ready for the lights of the NBA. So I want to see how you guys feel about this matchup. I'll come to you first on this one, Mike. Your thoughts, Grizzlies Jazz as the nightcapper. I lose Mike. Mike, are you there? Can you hear me, Mike?
Yeah, man, I'm sorry. I'm good now. Grizzlies Jazz as the nightcapper, I think this is going to be – it's so much that you don't know. You just mentioned Donovan Mitchell not being – we haven't seen him play in a while. To me, I think it's as simple as that. If Donovan Mitchell plays, this Jazz team – has threats on all levels. Mike Conley, I think, has been an underrated point guard for a while in this league with what Rudy Gobert and some of those guys have, what they come off the bench with. Jordan Clarkson, Joe Ingles as depth pieces, and Ingles is a pretty efficient shooter. We give him a hard time a lot of times, but he can put up some points. But the thing about it is the Jazz, to me, it comes down to can that team execute, and is Mitchell healthy? Because if you don't execute and you can't play really good offensive basketball, Memphis is hard to beat. Memphis comes, they play hard on the defensive end. Memphis has a really interesting way of being able to disrupt your timing and make it hard on you. You have to come and play quality basketball against Memphis for 48 minutes to beat that team. And we talked about Donovan Mitchell, but Utah don't have anybody on their squad that can stay in front of Ja Morant. And I think that there's a strong possibility that this is where Ja Morant really begins to introduce himself to the national stage for people that are not avid fans of basketball, but for the casual fan to really see him and learn about who he is as a player. So, I mean, I think you have to think that the series favors the the Jazz simply as that number one seed. But it's like they say sometimes sitting at the card table, bro, you better come correct. Because if not, Memphis is going to check you.
Okay, Roger, I don't know if you've been keeping up with at least the Memphis Grizzlies or the Utah Jazz. Your thoughts on this matchup, a one seed versus an eight seed, where it doesn't really feel like the seeding means much. Your thoughts?
Yeah, well, you know, what I've been doing is playing a lot of NBA 2K1 during the pandemic. So I'm on board with a lot of these players. You know, I know Morant is. I know Mitchell is. I'm looking at the supporting cast a bit. Bogdanovich at Utah, like, I think he's a great supporting player. Connolly, Clarkson, they're good supporting players. I think that's where Utah got the edge on Memphis. You know, it is Morant, and I think Morant is going to be a household name, as was just mentioned perfectly. I think he's a star of the future. I think they just got to get more players around him. You know, Dylan Brooks is a good player too, and Valanciunas, I think, is another good player. So it's the supporting cast. It's the Morant versus Mitchell show, who I didn't know was from Connecticut, which is crazy. I'm not a huge fan of Connecticut right now, Ty, I must be honest with you. Bellator on Friday night, a friend of mine lost a fight up there, so up in Uncasville. So, you know, we got a bit of a bad feeling about Connecticut at the moment, but I didn't realize there's some of the names of the athletes that come from there over the years. I was blown away. It's like it is a hotbed for amazing athletes, Connecticut is, and I didn't realize just how good some of them were. But anyway, back on point. Mitchell versus Morant, and I think Morant's. I think his year's next year. And looking at the. Looking at the betting line on it, it's 9 points in favor of Utah at the moment. So, uphill battle for Memphis, but I can see Utah winning this one.
Okay, and Eric, your thoughts on this matchup?
Well, I think this could be a dangerous situation for the Utah Jazz. The Memphis Grizzlies are playing with a lot of heart right now. Ja Morant is elevating his game into the superstar that we knew he could be. He's got a good supporting cast. They're going to need a big performance out of Jaren Jackson, Valanciunas, Dylan Brooks. They're going to have help from their bench with Grayson Allen and Bain having to get involved. And Utah, on the other hand, they're playing out of their mind. Well, Jordan Clarkson, I should say, has been playing out of his mind all year coming off the bench. I mean, this guy should be a candidate for Sixth Man of the Year. That's how good he's been playing all year long. Rudy Gobert and Royce O'Neal, they're going to have big games. They've been inconsistent. Rudy Gobert got that big contract, and, you know, I like Shaq. You know, Shaq went on a Twitter war with this guy just out of his mind. Like, how could you pay a guy this much money that doesn't, perform? He's, you know, 13 points a game. This guy needs to get his game, his offensive game, elevated. He's already good on the defensive side to get rebounds, but these guys need to give Mitchell help. But with that being said, Bogdanovich, all these guys, Conley Jr., Derek Favors, the Utah Jazz are an extremely deep team, and they can bang with the best of them in the NBA. I think this is one of the teams that is a threat to slow down the Lakers just because of O'Neal and Gilbert down there in the paint. These guys can do some damage. So if the Grizzlies, they're going to have to fire on all cylinders in every game. They're definitely going to make it an interesting series. This is going to be another fun series to watch, especially the way John Morant's performing. But I just don't think at the end of the day the Grizzlies have what it takes to beat this team in a seven-game series. So I think this is going to go six games, timeless. I don't think the Grizzlies are going to get swept or blown out of the water because they do match up against the Jazz pretty decently with the guys I mentioned if these guys are on their A game. So they're a good defensive team. Utah is a good defensive team. And they both have explosive offenses at the same time. So it's going to be really fun to watch, but I definitely give the edge to Donovan Mitchell and company for sure.
And I agree. I'm going with Utah. I feel like this goes five. I think this is going to get messy. I think Utah will actually drown these guys out. John Morant, they can let go crazy. Joe Val is another guy they got to worry about. Dylan Brooks is probably the X factor they're going to have to try and be concerned about. But I feel like Utah has the experience, and the battery in Donovan Mitchell's back is going to make this even more exciting for the number one seed out west. Okay, we're going to start to close up the brunch. I need plugs and closeouts from each of you. I'm going to start with you first, Mike. I need a plug, closeout, shout-out, anything that you'd like to promote as we shut the doors here at the Sunday Morning Brunch.
All your time is for a reason, man. 20 years ago, you'd have been a hit. You'd be a hit 20 years from now, man. It's always a pleasure to step in and join you, man, and thank you for always having me alongside. You know, check out the barbershop on Clubhouse. We got some cool things going on at Times Joint. Also, the Lakers Nation on the Clubhouse platform. The Lakers Club is doing it big and as successful a sports club as you'll find on that platform. And also newly founded on the same platform is now Braves Country. Especially as the playoffs start to, when the playoffs do wind up throughout the summer, you know, it's going to be some long summer months where you'd like some sports picks. So pop in and check us out on Braves Country. It might be a Braves theme, but we talk a lot about what's going on all across the sport of baseball and in sports in general. As you guys know, baseball is a slow-moving game, so a lot of times we can have a lot of other engaging conversations. So shout-out to Timeless. Thanks, Eric. Thanks to my guy across the pond for jumping in, interacting with me today. You guys are always a pleasure to share space with and the airways, and I look forward to chopping it up more again. My pleasure. Respect.
Thank you, Mike. As always, a brother of mine forever. Can never forget how amazing this guy is, man. He does it all, and he supports me every day, every step of the way, man. I salute you and tip my cap to you as well, Mike. Do what you got to do. I'll be over there shortly. All right. I'm going to come to you next, Rodri. Need a plug, closeout, shout-out, anything that you like to promote. And, you know, as he leaves, I want you guys to know that this guy has and Mike that just left, he has a great wealth of knowledge of sports, and he's a blind man, just to let you know how significant that is.
Wow.
And he just had a whole conversation and held his own here in Sports City. He's been with me every single day. He's blind, literally, and knows everything about. So, he has my heart. Like, I support the hell out of him, out of everything he does, just to let y'all know that. But I need a plug, close out, shout out, Rodri, as we close the doors here at the brunch.
Yeah, I appreciate it, Mike, anyway, but now I know that. I just respect him even more than I already did. Well, you know, what Mike just reminded me of there when he was talking is what, you know, how much we've missed sports, but not just sports, you know, how much we need sports. To have a sports talk radio, to have this thing moving the way it is now, you know, I feel like we're back on track. I feel like Sports City Chefs is moving forward. Eric, Mike, you know, the boys is coming in the week, doing the job, you know, and I'm in yourself back in the helm and being happy and being healthy and being, you know, saying things like that. It's what it's all about, you know. I love watching sports and I love being a part of sports, but for me to be who I want to be in my life, I need this as well. And I think it's coming back. I think we're doing a great job. We're gonna go back into the NFL tomorrow night. Myself and James Greenwood. We're gonna look over the AFC and NFC South. Yes, we will be talking about Tim Tebow and the Jacksonville Jaguars. If you want to come in and drop in and listen in, anybody out there, we're gonna go into depth on the rosters and the front office. I'd like to do and we're just gonna have a bit of fun with it. But try and get a feeling on where it's heading. I mean, that's a good division, the South and AFC and NFC. But, Connecticut. No, it's raining over here in Wales, Ty. Eric, I don't know what it's doing down there in Texas, but I'm sure it's better weather than what we got here. But isn't it great that we can do this on a Sunday and I can just, you know, float ideas and float stories and talk about things with the way it is now in the world? You know, a great friend of mine from Connecticut and, you know, a new friend from Texas and then Mike coming in and then learning something like that. This is what sports is all about. This is why sports are the greatest thing, better than politics, by the way. And looking forward to the next time, guys.
Yeah, and by the way, he's in Colorado. He's not in Texas. He's in Colorado.
My God, it's a beautiful day here in the Rocky Mountains, about 75 degrees. You got a nice view of the San Juan Rocky Mountains in the background. It's beautiful. You still need to make your way out here to Timeless, by the way.
I come through there on the bus. I come over the Rocky Mountains.
Come on down, yeah, anytime. You already know.
And it was snowing. It was snowing. I come through on the ground, and we almost stayed the night in Aspen because it was that bad. But we had to pay for it, by the way. The Greyhound wouldn't pay for it. But anyway, that's a story for another day. I didn't want to interrupt. Sorry, guys.
If you keep it up, Eric, if you keep this attitude going, right, the weekend of my birthday, where I told you I plan on going to Vegas, which more than likely I do every year, that Sunday, the Lions played the Broncos in Denver.
Uh-oh.
Keep it up.
Yep.
You keep it up. You may get.
Yep. Hey, I'll be there with you, bro. I'll be sporting the Lions gear for sure.
Oh no! Don't do this to me. You're gonna pull me out of bed on football Sunday. This is bad. I need to come up with a game plan. I already told one of the people that I'm on Clubhouse with, that I want to go to the Atlanta Falcons game with the Lions. It's the day after Christmas. Sirius wants to go to Pittsburgh versus the Lions, and that's the Sunday before Thanksgiving. So I got a lot of requests. We also play the 49ers to start the season off September 12th. That's in Detroit, though. So you have a lot of opportunities to get your shot at Timeless. I need a plug, closeout, shout-out, anything that you'd like to promote. Big Easy, as we get up out of the brunch.
Oh, yeah. Shout out to Mike, Laker Nation, in the clubhouse for sure. A lot of respect for him. Mr. Jones, Timeless, you already know. Much love and respect. It's a pleasure that we get to do this and a blessing. And we're doing big things. Thanks to all the supporters and listeners out there that have been, that have been supporting us. Check us out the website, sportscitychefs.com. Get yourself some merchandise. We got hoodies, shirts, coffee mugs, tumblers, and much more coming up soon. So be sure to get your merch and represent. Tell a friend to tell a friend. You already know. It's the chefs again.
And I don't even got to do too much, but you know what? Today still continues.
Playoffs? Don't talk about playoffs. You kidding me? Playoffs? I just hope we can win a game.
And tell a friend to tell a friend that it's the chefs again. And if they don't know, now they know.
Sports City, chefs. Sports City, chefs. Sports City, chefs. Kaboom, Sports City chefs is in the room. Cooking up hot topics to put up on your spoon. They well in tune, blown like a flower in June. Superman versus MF Doom, the clouds loom. So tell a friend it's the Sports City chefs again. Pay attention, tune in, we on the set again. Sports City, chef, yeah,
Cabin, Taj,
Woo,
Connecticut,